to another episode of Pit Lane Parlay.
Welcome to another episode of Pit Lane Parlay. My name is host Mike Joko. Matt and Jess join me. And let's just jump right into it this week, guys. First off, you know, hashtag get well, Wickens. It was a scary Sunday, and we are glad that he is at least alive for now. I'm sure everybody saw it. We're not going to talk about the crash at all, but we will give some updates, obviously. Well, I'll let you guys say a few words, or if Matt, you want to jump right into the medical update, and we'll get this train running here.
Yeah, obviously it's kind of the worst part about being an IndyCar fan is seeing something like that happen. And we all know when we see something like that, we all get this sinking feeling in our gut. And it's probably one of, if not the worst feelings in the world, to kind of being in the unknown and seeing a devastating crash like that. So obviously us here at Pit Lane Parlay and just the racing community around the world, we really wish Robert the best and hope he has a speedy recovery here. I haven't gotten a medical update, I think, in the last 2 days. You know, obviously he had broke his ankles. He broke an arm. He had a pulmonary bruise, and it's still kind of a cryptic injury to his spine. There hasn't really been too much information about that. So that's very worrying. We don't really know the severity of it, but it's just one of those things where, you know, you see that happen. And I didn't know if my parents were watching, but I like texted them right away. And, you know, Sammy was taking a nap and I woke her up, and she came and watched it with me because she knows how scary those situations can be. But definitely glad he's alive, and we wish him the best.
Yeah, I definitely just want to say that I hope he gets well soon, and I can't wait to see him back at the track. Like you guys, you know, I got on the phone immediately. I started letting everybody I knew know what was going on. And also I was texting everybody I knew to see if there were any updates from the track, what's going on. So I do appreciate everybody trying to keep me in the loop because I wasn't able to be there. So I'm glad that as of right now, the situation looks pretty good. All things considered, I mean, yes, he has a severe back injury, but considering what the alternative could have been, I'm pleased with that. And for those of you who have not seen it, it is a mid back injury. So that, you know, obviously I'm not a doctor, but that is better than like a neck injury or something like that. So it's looking good, and I do hope he gets well soon.
Yes, and for those who would like, if you go to tomotorsports.com, there is a Get Well Wickens sticker and t-shirt available. We will put the link on our social media and in the episode show notes for you to purchase them. And I believe the Wickens sticker and t-shirt, the money is going towards spinal injury research, if I'm not mistaken. So, moving on from that,
it's going to Sam Schmidt's Conquer Now, I think is the name
yes,
of the charity, and it is specifically for spinal cord injury research.
See, I'm glad one of us remembered to look at that. Real quick, before we kind of, you know, reflect on what was a fantastic rookie year. I know there was some concern about the quality of the fencing at the Pocono Raceway in turn three after he, you know, obviously there was almost an 80-foot section of fencing that was sheared away. I am going to give IndyCar and Pocono Raceway the benefit of the doubt because those guys are very smart and way smarter than the three of us combined, I would imagine. And you know, IndyCar signed off on it and helped Pocono fix it. And I have my full faith in IndyCar's safety team that they wouldn't sign off on haphazard work. I know Bourdais was concerned, but And thankfully we didn't have to test out the fencing at another point in the race, but I think we could probably just leave that one at that. Matt, what topic should we get to next?
Do you want to talk about maybe future safety or reflect on Wickens as his season?
I guess we can touch on it briefly here. There's probably no right answer to this. I think our pal Marshall Pruitt wrote the other day that, you know, in the current times, you know, catch fencing is probably the best solution, as they're always looking to improve safety, you know, going forward. And I'm sure they will look at this crash more times and more times to come up and see if there's a better solution. Even Dalton Collette, who I believe is a very smart guy, mentioned that catch fencing is probably, you know, the right now the safest option out there. So I don't know if you guys disagree or have any thoughts, but I'll turn it over to Matt or Jess before I chime in on something I thought about.
Go ahead, Jess.
So I have to say that right now, probably with, cost restrictions and everything else being thought about, that catch fencing is the best option. I saw some talk of maybe making the safer barrier twice as tall as it is. The only unfortunate thing about that is, and it blocks a lot of the view, but, you know, at most tracks where it would be needed, it wouldn't be too big of an issue, I don't think. Also saw a lot of people talking about like plexiglass or some sort of laminate glass. And that is a great idea, but it's just not going to be cost effective to do that very quickly. So I think that for right now, everybody needs to put their heads together and start thinking about options. But I think the fence is the best thing we've got.
I think Jess hits the nail on the head as far as being cost effective, because are there better solutions than the fence that could be researched? Yes, a safer barrier that's two or three times as tall as the one we have now, or some sort of plexiglass like you would see at a hockey arena. Those would be better options as far as not completely destroying the car and compromising the driver in some situations. But as Robin Miller pointed out in that article, who's going to pay for that? You know, it's going to be an expensive endeavor to research. It's going to be an expensive endeavor to implement. Tracks a lot of nowadays, you know, barely break even. When we had the safer barrier introduced by the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, that was at a time where they were just kind of flush to cash. So they decided to go out and research that, and it's one of the best inventions in modern racing. But with this, it just seems like, you know, at the end of the day, as much as getting into the fence is terrible for as far as driver injury goes, I mean, at the end of the day, it did keep the car on the track. And unfortunately, that's what it's designed to do. And when a car is going 200 miles an hour, any airborne crash is not going to be pretty. It's going to be interesting to see what comes of this. I don't know if they're going to start doing a project on it, but it's just going to cost a lot of money.
Yeah. I'll leave it at that. Only adding, you know, I heard just raise the safer barrier argument, which makes sense. Maybe at a track like Pocono, where the grandstands for the most part are just down the front stretch, where you don't have, you know, guys or anybody watching from turn three or turn one, really, and down most of the back stretch, except where the campers are. But a lot of tracks, and obviously it wouldn't work at, I wouldn't imagine it would work at many tracks like Indianapolis, where there are guys and, you know, everybody's watching from every point in the track.
Or like a Bristol, like imagine, because that track's got grandstands all the way around. It just would not work.
So moving on from that, we'll leave it at that. And obviously we hope he gets well as soon as possible. Reflecting on Wickens' rookie season, and I know before the season started, we all made predictions about Rookie of the Year. I think, Matt, you were actually on that episode before you were our hired gun.
I don't think so, because I definitely would have probably made fun of someone for saying Wickens, and now obviously
okay.
I'll live up to that and say that I did tweet that I don't think Wickens is gonna be as good as everybody. So I will own that and say that that's my pretty wrong on that one.
I don't remember who Jess picked. I think she picked Zach Veach. We'll have to go back and listen to one of the preseason episodes. I do remember talking about Wickens and picking him because he was a little bit more advanced in age and career experience. But I'm still surprised he, in the first race of the season, was, you know, the pole sitter fighting for the win. Really, probably almost should have won without the Rossi contact. And, you know, multiple podium finishes, led 183 laps, something like that. Super impressive. He could still win the Rookie of the Year and not race in the last four races of the year. So definitely, you know, while not ending up as, you know, the best rookie ever, because I wasn't unfortunately able to win a race this year, I still think he's, you know, definitely in the top five of open wheel rookies.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I've only done a handful of seasons for my rating system, but up in, you know, I've done 86 through 90 and then 2008 to now, and Wickens is going to be the highest rated rookie I've gotten to. Had a Pagenaud in 2012, even though he was his second time around, but still designated a rookie. Yeah, but looking at Wickens' seasons, it's almost like a season of what ifs, because, you know, St. Pete, you know, was right there, obviously could have won. Iowa had the bad strategy call late there in the race and pitted. Texas, he was running really well and got taken out by Carpenter. Indy, his their team's best driver didn't make the race, and he managed to get a top 10 out of it, which was super impressive. Phoenix was leading at the end and got passed by Newgarden. I mean, you could just go down and down the list that, you know, there he could have easily had three or four wins. And just to see what he was able to do at his, for the most part, his first time at most of these venues, super impressive. So I really, really hope he makes a comeback. Obviously, his health and well-being is first and foremost, but, you know, as we see in history tells us anything, most of the time when a driver gets injured, the first thing they want to do is just get back into a race car. So we'll monitor his recovery. We wish him the best, and it would be truly an honor to watch him race again.
Yeah, for lack of anything other to say, because you guys kind of covered it all, I just want to say, like, I can't wait to see him back in a car, because it's been super impressive to watch him. He clearly is extremely talented, and IndyCar needs somebody like that. So I really hope he gets better, hope he gets back soon, and can't wait to watch him again.
Yes, very well said. Moving on, just a quick Pocono review. I'll start with the second point that we wrote down here. Time to change the start procedure. Matt, let's get your thoughts. I know you wanted to talk about that, so we'll turn it over to you, and then Jess and I will chime in.
I don't know. Maybe we should get Scott Dixon on the show to kind of get here again. But yeah, this isn't the first time this year, because I think it was just actually last race in Mid-Ohio where Rossi, quote-unquote, snookered everybody on the start. Same thing happened this week. You know, power was well outside of the restart zone and was doing everything that race control had asked him to do as far as building up the speed. And there was still an incident between Rahal and Piggott in the back. And, you know, I think what happens is just you get guys in the back who are just really ready to go, and the guys up front are just doing what they're told and not going, and just creates a accordion effect. So I think, you know, we do have to take a long, hard look at moving the restart zone back a little bit. So we can, or either that or telling the guys in the back of the field to calm down, because we got the same thing in 2003, and I don't remember how it was addressed, but something was done. 2013, 2014, brain fade. But yeah, because I know Grand Prix of Indy, that happened once in St. Pete, Marco and Hawksworth crashed once, same kind of deal. So yeah, I think definitely needs to be either reviewed or guys just need to be told to calm down.
I'm a fan for telling the guys to calm down. I don't, obviously, Power didn't do anything wrong. I have no hard feelings for what he was doing. Obviously, neither did IndyCar. The guys in the back just need to, for lack of a better way of putting it, they need to pay attention to what they're doing. Because clearly there was a little bit of a gap, and I guess Ray Hall just decided that it was time to go and wasn't paying attention further ahead. He was only looking at the guy in front of him. So I think he needs to, or I think in general, they need to be told, you know, when you're in the back, you need to, you know, have your head about you and pay attention and don't jump the gun. Because if you do, it's going to cause stupid accidents like that.
Yes, very well said. The best part was Team Penske releasing the data. I didn't get to see that clip live. You know, that was during the red flag, and I was running around somewhere. But I did see it after the race, and I don't know if anybody got to if they played the post race press conference anywhere, if there was a transcript of it. But Scott Dixon did admit, hey, I was wrong in saying that. And I believe Will Power's quote to Scott Dixon on the stage was, "You're a wanker," which brought out a big laugh and was a much needed light moment in a tiring day. But to me, that I think, and my gut feeling says, that Graham Ray Hall got extra aggressive because he knew it was going to be difficult to pass at Pocono with the Super Speedway aero kit. Maybe he was just trying to jump the gun because, you know, the restart or the start of the race is the time to make your move. Not saying what he did was a good idea, because he went right into the back of Spencer Pigot and effectively ruined Pigot's race and ruined his own race. Yeah, most of the time this year that Ray Hall's had some opening lap incidents, he's been able to rebound. You know, when he punted Pagano somewhere earlier in the year. Was that Detroit?
Long Beach.
Long Beach, thank you. This time he wasn't really ever able to recover. The race itself obviously was not, you know, filled with a ton of passes. I think the front wing helped in terms of you know, it allowed guys to get a little bit closer, but it didn't quite create the passing that maybe they expected it to. Although I know it was probably tough to really dial in your settings when you have 1 hour of practice time and, you know, a track that had been rained on 2 days before anything. And then obviously the night before the race, it rained pretty hard. So I know IndyCar is going to work hard on it. Obviously, in Jay Fry we trust, and in IndyCar Aero team we trust. I don't know what you call them, but in Bill Pappas we trust. And I know both Will Power and Scott Dixon, you know, mentioned Bill Pappas and team after the race. So I'm sure they'll get it right. I think that test at Indy 2 weeks ago proved that they're on in the right direction, especially with the a little bit of a better tire as well. I don't know if you guys agree or disagree, but I'll turn it over to Matt.
Yeah. The one fault with this year has probably been the Super Speedway kits. Unfortunately, it just hasn't done super well at Indy, and we know all the weather and whatnot that happened at Indy. And then Pocono as well. But you know, the one thing that caught me off guard about Pocono was the driver saying how bumpy turn two was, which really hampered them getting a run down the straightaway into turn three. So that was kind of a weird thing that I don't know if just IndyCar didn't expect that, or I don't know if Pocono was realizing how bumpy turn two was. But the two solutions would be the front wing or, you know, changing the front wing for next year, or adding more horsepower, which is on the way, but that's not going to be next year. So I guess a temporary solution would be is back in 2009, I think, is when IndyCar actually just introduced push-to-pass, but not only on road courses, they introduced push-to-pass everywhere. So for a temporary solution, it could be maybe seeing a reintroduction of push-to-pass on the super speedways, which got taken away because of some ethanol issue in 2012, I think, or something. But hopefully they'll get it figured out. You know, obviously in Jay Fry we trust. He'll do his job. The aerodynamics team will do their job. We're in solid hands, so I'm not too worried about it. It was just kind of a not as good of a show as it could have been on Sunday, plus the cloud of hanging over after the first or the lap 8 incident that obviously didn't help either.
Yeah, so after the incident, I think that everybody was a little more subdued, maybe. And I'm not saying they shouldn't have been. They absolutely should have been. But I do agree the aero kit needs a little bit of tweaking. I know they're working on it. I just think, you know, it honestly, it wasn't as bad as a lot of people made it out to be, I didn't think. But yeah, they do need to tweak the aero kit. I'm not really sure about bringing back the push to pass, but I guess if it was just a temporary thing, maybe, but I don't know. We'll see.
That was the best answer Jess has given all year. The I don't know part. I don't know why. But I do agree with Jess. I'm not so keen on bringing back to push to pass on the ovals, but I think it's worth investigating as a temporary fix. But I think with, you know, Firestone developing a new super speedway tire that Power and Dixon tested, we probably don't even need to have that debate, because next year we'll have a fantastic showing and this debate will be looked at as just a thing of the past. Moving on, quick announcement. If you're listening to the show on release day, Jess and I will be at the track all weekend. Please come find us. Probably have some giveaways and maybe Friday, but definitely Saturday before the Indy Lights autograph session in the Fan Village. We'll be doing a live show with a few surprise guests, including Christian Alexo, who was on the show a couple weeks ago, will probably be joining us along with maybe a couple other drivers that we're still trying to figure everything out. So the autograph session is at 2, so come over around 1 p.m. if you're at the track and come say hi and listen to the show, and we will record it and release it. Maybe at some point before the end of the weekend. Moving on.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, Jess.
So this one time you said we would have surprise guests, and then you named one of them. Not very much of a surprise. Just saying.
That's a fair point, but you know, it's a surprise guest because it's going to be a surprise to me too, because we haven't quite figured out who it is. So it's just, Christian is the only one that's not a surprise, because I was on the phone with Christian before we started recording tonight. So everybody come join. I'll have a Firestone hat to give away and a Marco Andretti autographed Dr. Pepper team shirt thing, whatever you call that jersey that I recently received. We'll give that away this weekend. And maybe some other stuff. Oh, Pit Lane Parlay stickers. And if I can squeeze an NJ Fry We Trust shirt into my tiny suitcase that I'm bringing with me this weekend. But I don't think I have any room left for that. Moving on, it's Stump the Host time.
Two quick things. First of all, do you have an extra Marco shirt hanging around anywhere for me? Because, I don't know, I've been needing a new towel around the house. So I need something to wipe up my messes with.
I think your pal Jake Neely has a whole collection of them. So, Jake, if you're listening, send some to Matt.
All right, fair enough. One quick point that we didn't get to, and we were touching on the higher safer barriers and the plexiglass and just kind of safety in general. A lot of comments on social media about the new windscreen that IndyCar has been testing.
Yes.
And in a situation like that, it could have come really in handy. And a lot of people were specifically referencing Ryan Hunter-Reay. And I kind of just wanted to share my thoughts about that. Obviously, in a situation where there's a loose tire on the track or a spring or some sort of, you know, medium-sized debris, axle or anything like that, you know, obviously a windscreen is going to go so far in keeping the driver safe. In a situation where a whole car is flying in the air and it's coming at your head, I don't think a windscreen is going to do a whole lot to protect you. It's not really what it was designed to do. So while it would have been nice, because if you look at Hinch's visor cam on board, you know, that is a perfect example where a windscreen would have been really helpful in trying to keep a driver safe. But in the situation of Hunter Ray, if Wickens' car was a couple inches lower, I don't think it would have made any difference at all. And I think Hunter Ray is – we never really touched on it, but Hunter Ray was really lucky to get out of that one too. I don't know if you guys have any thoughts on that.
I think what you said is I have no issue with. Jess?
Yeah, I agree. I think he's extremely, extremely lucky to have gotten out of that situation with no injuries.
Sweet. So now we'll – sorry, I just wanted to get that in. That's just something else that we saw a lot of on social media that I just wanted to address. But we'll change up the tone a little bit here. We'll go to our Stump the Host trivia question, and we're going to get your guys' takes here on what your Gateway history is. And by history, I mean the first ever round. So the first part of the trivia question is kind of the easy one, is what year was the first Gateway race in the kart era? Anybody remember? I'm watching your hands. I know if you'll Google.
1999.
Close.
Jess? 98. Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to jump in there. Go ahead, Jess. I got excited.
I was going to say 97.
That away, Jess. Woo! Foolish, like always. All right. So in that race, there were four drivers in that race who are now currently owners in IndyCar, either part owners or full owners. Can you name them? And for bonus points, can you name what teams they drove for in 1997?
Michael Andretti.
Do you know his team affiliation or not?
No. Jimmy Vassar for Ganassi.
There you go.
I think Jess.
Sam Schmidt.
Yep.
No, Sam Schmidt was IRL. He was not CART.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Silly Jess.
What country is Dixon from?
Okay.
I'm never going to let them go. I don't know why.
USA. USA. Oh,
there you go.
drivers that are currently owners.
Jess, do you know what team Andretti drove for?
Was it Newman Haas?
It was Newman Haas.
Yes. Look at me. 2 out of 4. This is where I'm going to – Dale Coyne? No.
Dale Coyne was one of the – well, a lot of it's his equipment, but he's one of the worst drivers of all time.
Yes. I remember you talking about that in your ratings. It wasn't Penske. It wasn't Ed Carpenter. It wasn't Chip Ganassi. It's got to be like one of these like co-owners that I'm not. Brian Herta?
Yeah. Who do you know who you drove for?
Oh, boy. Brian Herta. I feel like I'm going to guess and say it's a team that's not around anymore.
No, they're still here.
Okay.
The team he drove for gives away the final answer.
Christ.
Oh, God.
So Brian Herta, I think I'm going to tap out.
Yes.
Okay, hold on. Give me just a second.
My back is sore from getting the first three answers here.
So
I got the year.
You did the easy part.
So, Jess, again, the clue is the team Herta drove for gives away the final answer, the number 4 that we're missing.
Okay, give me a second. Let me think here. I can't remember everybody that Mike threw out since he threw out, you know,
he threw out Carpenter, everything. Ganassi, and Penske. I don't think Roger Penske sat in a race car since like
1958 or something like that.
Shoot. Schmidt.
Herta, we mentioned. It wasn't. Foyt was retired by then. Well, in the interest of time, let's give Jess a couple more seconds. Yeah, all right, Mac, go ahead.
We'll ease you into this one. So what is one of the main ingredients of a s'more?
Gr- Graham Crack. Oh, Ray Hall.
Yeah, there you go. So the answer is Ryan Herta drove for Ray Hall and Bobby Ray Hall drove for Bobby Ray Hall. So those were the four. And then Herta is now kind of part owner of the 98 car. And then Vassar is the part owner of Sebastian Bourdais' entry.
I think I'm going to make the show notes just what is the main ingredient in a s'more.
I'm going to ignore
everything else.
My mom always calls him Grandpa.
And I'm the one who goes, chocolate? Yeah.
It's something to do with Hershey's, I swear.
Okay, we're definitely going to, like, I'm going to edit that part, the chocolate, and we're going to make that our new show outro. Not this week, because I don't have time to do that before I leave for the airport in the morning, but coming soon to an outro near you is just saying the main ingredient in a s'more is chocolate.
It is the best part.
It is. No, the marshmallow is definitely the best part.
Nah, especially if you burn it. Ugh.
Well, we can save that debate for an off-season episode. And moving on, I will get Jess's opinion first. Let's see here. Where do we want to start? Obviously, Richmond is out for 2019, but possible for 2020. Not that surprising, although a little disappointing, again, just selfishly because it's a track I can drive to. I think we might have mentioned this last week, but can we get a round of applause for Mark Miles that Texas does not have the Texas Motor Speedway and Eddie Gossage do not have the exclusivity agreement anymore, which opens up the door possibly for Circuit of the Americas or San Antonio or Houston, or I don't know, the 800 other cities that are in the state of Texas. So we'll start with those. Jess, any thoughts? And then I'll chime in and we'll make Matt go last this time.
I'm happy to see Texas back for sure. I love Texas. Been to several races there and would love to go back. So it makes me happy that I'm going to have that opportunity. Obviously glad that IndyCar has the option to have other races there. In Richmond, I hate to do this to you, but I really could care less if they're there this year or next year. I mean, it would be nice to get another track there, but I don't have any personal feelings for Richmond.
That's fair. Speaking of Texas, I think David Malsher on Motorsport mentioned it that Circuit of the Americas, that a decision would be made kind of within the next 10 days on if that was the, you know, the 17th race to round out the schedule next year. I don't know what you guys think about Circuit of the Americas. I'll start. I think if they change the layout from the F1 layout, it could be a really cool track. I know almost nothing about it because I generally don't pay too close attention to the F1 race at Circuit of the Americas every year, because it's generally on when there's either an Indy. Oh no, there's not an IndyCar race because it's in what, November. I'm usually busy watching football at that point, but I think, you know, Texas is obviously a great market. There's, you know, a million people down there, so there'd be plenty of people, and I think you could get a cool, you know, if they make it a real party type weekend, maybe some concert going on one night or something like that, you could really draw a diverse crowd to the track, which is, you know, something IndyCar could use. So I would be cool with COTA. I don't know anything about the proposed layout for San Antonio that we've seen tossed up, so I don't really have much opinion there, but I think Circuit of the Americas would be a pretty cool track to add in there, and one that I would definitely make an effort to get to next year. Jess?
Yeah, I think it would be fun to see. I'm not a huge F1 follower, but I've watched it a couple times. I think it's a good layout, so it would be a fun race.
I don't know about if I would want to see the F1 layout used, just because if you're ever interested in seeing IndyCar go 15 seconds slower than a Formula One car, then I guess it'd be all right. But the layout, it's the original layout's really long, and I feel like if they could find a way to get rid of kind of that first sector, but I think that they would kind of have to keep it. So I guess I'm like Mike, I don't really know what the different configurations they would use. I would stray away from potentially setting up IndyCar to look completely worthless next to a Formula One car in a road course, because that would kind of just be a bad look all around for IndyCar.
Yeah, I don't know the track well enough, because the only time I've seen it is in a video game and, you know, the occasional lap I watch on TV, to know what possible configurations you could make. Obviously, you know, I'm basing this expertise based on a video game, so take it with a grain of salt. That it doesn't look like you can do much in, you know, that first sector of the course in terms of layout. But obviously, I guess this is all just conjecture at this point, and we'll move on. Brazil, you know, I forget his first name again, Matt. Mr. Sparks, the IndyCar schedule man.
Steven,
thank you. I always want to say Bubba Sparks, but I know that's like some rapper or something like that.
Jess, can we confirm that, or
can we call him Bubba Sparks?
I mean, you can call him Bubba Sparks, but yes, I do believe that Bubba Sparks is some kind of music artist. I have no idea what type.
Sounds like a backup dancer for Kesha.
Not for Kesha.
I think that was a direct shot at Jess, similar to
what?
Anyway, he says, you know, Brazil is not in discussions for 2019. I didn't really take you know, the news article found online for the Brazilian newspaper as, oh, we're in discussions. It was more of the tourism department wants to, you know, possibly discuss this, or, you know, kind of put it out there and see what the public thinks. But good for him to address it before we start talking about it for the next 6 months and wonder where Brazil is next year. And I guess the only other bit of venue news, oh, there's two more things here on our list. Toyota dropped out of their Long Beach sponsorship, which I think we mentioned briefly last week as not being all that surprising. And, you know, Robin Miller has already said that there will be a new sponsor announced within the next month, and that four companies called within, I guess, a couple days of Toyota announcing it, saying that they were interested. I'm not shocked. As I mentioned last week, the race always draws a huge crowd, and it was a great race this year. So Jess or Matt, I don't know if you guys have any thoughts on that, or if we should keep moving on.
Nope.
But Jess?
Yep, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to get Mike. I don't know if I want to put him on the spot, but if Jim Iello is right and he says that there's IndyCar's considering three venues to replace Phoenix, do you have any idea who or what? Do you think it really is the Circuit of the Americas, or is it going to be insert random track?
Let's pick three here, and we'll make this our poll of the week, which of the three it's going to be. We'll each pick a track, and we'll make it in the poll. Jess, go ahead.
Oh, boo.
I'm putting Jess on the spot first.
I'm going to say Chicagoland.
You can go second, Mike.
Well, I'm going to take Circuit of the Americas then.
You always take the easy. See, when we do our predictions for Gateway later, you have to go last, because so you can't cop out and take Veach as your dark horse again, punk. Gosh, if it's not Richmond, if it's not Homestead, you know, I'm going to say a big screw it and go with the Charlotte Roval. Because they did come out this last week, the president of SMI came out and said that the Charlotte Roval was not a one-time configuration designed to only host NASCAR. They're trying to get IndyCar and IMSA to run there too. So I think it'd actually be pretty cool to see IndyCars run there. Well, I'll be interested. I might actually watch that NASCAR race, see what it's like. But I'll go with the Charlotte Roval.
Fair enough. Speaking of IndyCar and NASCAR, Connor Daly is racing at Road America in the Xfinity Series this weekend. I believe Catherine Legg is as well.
I think so.
And Bill Elliott, even though he's not IndyCar, but still kind of cool because he's like 150 years old. who is the other one I'm missing here? Oh, James Davison, I believe, is racing this weekend. He actually did pretty well last year. So I think the race is when we're at the track on Saturday. But if it's on a TV somewhere, I would like to watch Connor run a couple laps. And hope he does well.
Yeah, it's kind of like the whole F1 going at Circuit Americas and then the IndyCar going. If you ever wanted to see a car do a 3-minute lap at Road America, I'd definitely tune in.
Yeah, I mean, I probably wouldn't have the attention span to watch a full race, but I hope Connor does well, and I hope he enjoys it, but I hope he's in IndyCar full-time soon. Speaking of drivers, you know, we'll make it quick here. Will Power and Simon Pagenaud back with Penske for at least next year, just after I think I put Pagenaud in the hot seat last week. But we don't know for how long. I imagine it's probably 2 years, because I know Penske typically likes to lock up guys to 2 to 3 year contracts. And I don't think we got to this because it was announced probably hours after we recorded last week. Everybody's favorite, Santino Ferrucci, is racing the final two races in Portland and Sonoma for Dale Coyne in the third car. I forget the sponsor, but the car is purple, so you definitely won't be able to miss it on track. I know we gave our thoughts on Ferrucci last week, and Jess, what do you think? Are you still, thoughts still hold the same?
Bring on the villain.
Yeah. It's just a side note. Portland and Sonoma are going to be really interesting because there's going to be a pretty hefty field. You got Salas was confirmed in the Yunkos car for Portland. Ferrucci's confirmed. Harvey's coming back. And I think that might be all of it. Baltazar Legazeme is still being rumored to be showing up to Portland because that was all the way back in February. I don't know if that's actually happening. But that would fit right into the Jess's theme of
left field.
as far as Ferrucci goes, I'm super pumped. Hopefully he can fit the villain role and garner enough hate for people to kind of tune in a little bit more.
Yeah, I agree. I know he was at the track in Pocono as well. Given everything going on, I didn't really find time to talk with him, but if I see him this weekend, I would love to get his opinion on everything. And I thought it was great that Jay Fry, you know, came out when asked by racer.com. I forget if it was Pruitt or Robin Miller who wrote the article. So I apologize, but go to racer.com and you can find the article where Jay Fry said, listen, you know, we saw him for a weekend in Detroit. We don't need to babysit him. We don't need to monitor him any extra. And I have no problem with that approach. And I think that's the right approach. They shouldn't babysit him like he's a child. He did what he did in Europe, whatever track he was on. Let's see what he can do and I hope he proves almost everybody wrong, because the social media comments have been especially brutal towards those posting the news and towards Mr. Ferrucci as well. Some words that I don't think I could ever actually say. So we'll just leave that at that and move on. Gabby Chavez back for Gateway. I'm not going to say this is totally out of left field, but when Harding said that Gabby Chavez was out of the car for, you know, the remainder of the year as they evaluated second driver options, and now Gabby is back in, I'm happy for Gabby because I think he deserves the chance, but I feel like it kind of goes against what they said a couple weeks ago. I don't know if you guys agree or disagree, if I'm just reading too much into it. I'll let either of you guys take it from here.
Yeah, it just kind of comes back to the point where we had Jim Aiello on. I just didn't understand the Harding strategy of taking Chavez out and putting Daly in unless they were running two cars. And now nothing like evaluating talent for next year, like putting the guy you have under contract in for under 2019 in the car for the weekend. So it doesn't make sense to me, but I am happy to see Chavez back though. So hopefully he can put in a good effort.
Jess?
Maybe they already picked their driver for next year, so they no longer need to evaluate anyone.
That's a great point.
Are you talking about Santino?
That's all I'm going to say right there.
You're referring to Santino, right?
Yes.
Totally. Switching gears back to F1, I wanted to bring up this one before our last update topic. Fernando Alonso came out today and said, I turned down Red Bull after was it Red Bull last week, said we never wanted Fernando Alonso. I feel like this is kind of some sort of high school drama right now, and he said, she said, and obviously we'll never know who's right, but I love that Fernando Alonso speaks his mind, and that's why I think he would be a great fit in IndyCar. And I'm just going to leave that one at that. Hats off to Fernando for speaking his mind and sticking his neck out there when the confusion of Red Bull Racing is trying to figure out what the heck they're doing for next year.
Classic case of she didn't dump me, I dumped her.
Jess, any input or should we move on to our next to last topic?
I think you guys covered it.
Perfect. So the last topic is Chevy and Honda, written earlier today by Marshall Pruitt. Chevy and Honda both willing to add more engines next year, which first is great for the season because we could definitely and easily see, you know, 25-ish full-time cars. You know, that now that let's say Honda and Chevy both go, you know, maybe 2020, and then that gets you to a potential of 35 to 40 entries at the Indy 500 because now engine leases are a little bit easier to come across for the month of May, which I think is the hold up for maybe two or three guys this year. So I think that was probably the best news second best news we heard all week, other than that Robert Wickens was awake and alert, you know, being extracted from his car. I don't know, Jess, if you agree, or I'll leave you with your thoughts on this one.
I mean, obviously, it can only mean good things if we can have a bigger field, especially for the 500, more bumping or whatever they decide to do next year. I hope they still bump, but I think that having more cars will just bring more fans, and obviously that's the goal for the series and for all the teams.
Yeah, it was a fantastic article written by our good friend Marshall Pruitt. If anybody wants to go check it out, is at racer.com. Good guy, Marshall. It only can help. It's only going to get better. I think one of the biggest problems under the Randy Bernard era was teams like Michael Shank Racing couldn't have access to an engine. So it just was one of those things where we could have had some bumping some years. It just didn't add up. And one of the interesting points from the article was that it sounds like Chevy and Honda take a loss on the engine leases every year. And then another article I found shared with Mike and Jess said that one oval on the IndyCar schedule says they lose $3 million a season. I think that was a Miller's mailbag. And yes. Team owners always say that they never make money in the year unless they're AJ Foyt. So it's almost like everybody in IndyCar makes a net loss, which just doesn't seem like it's going to add up. But, you know, I guess it's not really about the money in IndyCar, but a little disconcerting. But if they're opening up the engine leases, I think that's a positive sign.
Yes. Mark? No, I completely agree. They're not going to do that if finances are looking dire. So I don't know if Jess has any extra thought there, but if not, I'll turn it over to Matt for one more topic.
Which one's that?
Yeah, I don't think that it's any surprise to anyone that people do lose money, but I agree that if Chevy and Honda are willing to throw more engines out there, then that's got to be a positive sign for the series.
Yeah, very well said. And before we end our episode this week, we are going to skip pitfalls and just, you know, before we give our well wishes at the end of the episode, you know, again, tune in on Friday afternoons, maybe while you're sitting at the track this weekend. Listen to the show on wildfireradio.com or iTunes or Apple Podcasts or wherever the heck you listen to it. CastBox, we are featured on their main page. And make sure to also check out Hinch and Rossi's show, Off Track. There was no new episode this week, obviously. James had, you know, was spending time with Wicked's family, but the episodes are pretty good and pretty funny for the most part, and they talk about a lot of stuff that's not racing related. And lastly, thank you to our pals in Sound Q Audio. Remember to use code PLPFAN and you can get 35% off your purchase on their headphones or speakers or phone chargers. And both the phone charger and headphones are awesome products. So give it a check. The guy who runs it used to be a Formula Renault racer over in Europe, and he's a good dude. And we're going to end the, as I mentioned, end the episode differently this week than usual, just with a, get well Wiccans by everybody. So, our thoughts and well wishes are with Wiccans and his family as he continues to recover. Hopefully he can get back to Indianapolis soon to be with the amazing Dr. Trammell. And I'm sure this weekend at the track will be, great for everybody to kind of just have some positive feeling and hopefully, it's going to be a good race at Gateway. And I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, just get well, and we hope to see you soon, Wiccans. It's going to be a bummer not having you for the last couple weekends of the year.
Can't wait to see you back, Robbie. I hope you feel good soon.
And Jess, you are free to end the episode.
And guys, keep your lug nuts tight.